You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is First Draft, a dialogue on writing produced at Aspen Public Radio. I'm Mitzi Rabkin. First Draft highlights the voices of writers as they discuss their work, their craft, and the literary arts.
My guest is Karen Thompson Walker, author of The Age of Miracles. She has an MFA in creative writing from Columbia University and is a former book editor for Simon & Schuster. She wrote The Age of Miracles in the mornings before going to her editing job. The book is a coming-of-age story focusing on Julia, an 11-year-old girl who lives in suburban San Diego with her parents. They wake one day to discover the Earth's rotation is slowing, resulting in longer days and nights, gravitational shifts, and an environment in disarray. The story focuses on how Julia copes with the extraordinary events around the slowing, while simultaneously dealing with the other, more ordinary issues of growing up. The novel began as a short story, and I asked Karen Thompson Walker if the story was nagging at her or why she came to it years after writing it and turned it into a novel.
You know, it's interesting that you put it that way. I would say that story was definitely not nagging at me because I had other sort of loose ideas that I thought I might try to turn into a novel, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. And then one day, I just happened to look back over all the short stories in my thesis. I did, you know, I turned in like 6 short stories or 8 short stories as my master's thesis. And I looked back at all of them, and this time, for some reason, when I looked back at this one story, which had been only like 14 pages long, and I had not thought about it, I looked at it again, and it was kind of sudden, my sense that it might be something more. You know, it wasn't something I was thinking about for years. I just looked at the story again, and I was like, wait a minute. You know, 2 or 3 years ago when I wrote this, it seemed like a 14-page short story, but suddenly now I can imagine that a story like this could work as a novel. And it wasn't that I had it all figured out how I could do it or if I could even do it, but it just felt like it was a novel idea. And I can start to see the directions, like all the ways that it could expand beyond what I had done in the 14 pages. It was sort of sudden in that sense. And then I made a couple of big changes early on, because actually in the short story, the Earth was speeding up, and it was a one-time event of 1 hour. But when I looked at it again and decided to try to turn it into a novel, I reversed it and decided to have the Earth be slowing down. And I also had the feeling that to make it be a continuing story, for it to work as a novel, it should be an ongoing catastrophe. So that's why I decided to have it be that the rotation of the Earth is slowing and continuing to slow rather than just a one-time change. So those were the two changes that I think made it possible to try to turn it into a novel. But when I finished the short story years earlier in graduate school, I would have been really surprised if somehow I had found out that I was later going to turn that little story into a novel. That would have been really shocking. You know, I know some people sort of carry around a story for a lot of years before they are able to try to turn it into a novel. But this was a more surprising event.
And when you wrote this, you had a full-time job as an editor in New York, so you were getting up in the mornings and writing for about an hour?
I feel like sometimes when people ask me about that, I feel compelled to clarify that I luckily didn't have to be at work until like 9:30, so I wasn't waking up at 5 a.m., but I did wake up earlier than I would have otherwise. The book was really written sort of, you know, 1 hour at a time at my desk in my little studio before work.
You're listening to First Draft, a dialogue on writing produced at Aspen Public Radio. I'm Mitzi Rabkin. My guest is Karen Thompson Walker, author of the novel, The Age of Miracles.
And what was it like for you to go to this editing job? You probably saw so many books that just never made it into print, and here you were toiling away. I mean, how did that affect your mood and your spirit?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, when I first started working in book publishing, it was right after I finished the MFA, and I was an editorial assistant. There was a period where it was very discouraging to see just how many books there are out there, I mean, and that are coming to publishers, and how many books that have a lot of merit get turned down for one reason or another. Especially for me, what was painful is how many books that are really well written, you know, the idea that a book that is just beautifully written might get turned down by every publisher for reasons outside of the quality of the writing was really painful to me, especially when I first left my MFA program. So that was hard, and it was also to see the way that editors just by necessity have, you know, they can't always read, or they don't always need to read an entire book. Like if a book comes to them and they can tell within 50 pages that they're not the right editor for it, or that there's something about it that they aren't connecting to, then it might be true that they're not the right editors if they turn it down without reading the whole thing, which I think is just, you know, which is fine and necessary. But also as a writer, to see that could be painful because you imagine every book, even if it's not a great book, you know that the person has spent a lot of hours writing it. It was hard at first. And then I think I just kind of developed some sort of second skin, thicker skin, you know, as I got used to it, I guess is what it is. But I know that I would not tell everything to some of my friends who are writers who didn't work in publishing. I would not tell them every story. You know, I wouldn't tell them about the great book that didn't sell to any publisher, because it's just kind of painful for writers to hear. But for me, since I was doing it every day, I just wanted to somehow get used to that and not let it get too deep into my head every time it happened. And the other thing is that I think is really important for the way that I work is that I did that the fact that I did my writing in the morning. So I would wake up fresh and kind of the furthest I ever was from my book publishing job was, you know, in the morning when I hadn't been to work since the previous afternoon, you know. So it was all the ideas about, ideas about sales and marketing that are part of life in a publishing house, but also the sort of familiarity with all the disappointing things that can happen to books and to writers. All those things were furthest from my head when I first woke up. So I was able to most days just dip into the writing itself and not worry about those things. And then, you know, sometimes when I got to work, then I would feel more vulnerable to those kinds of discouraging stories that would sort of happen every day. Just seeing another thing that happens that can be hard is seeing really good books that don't sell or that don't get the review attention that they deserve, even if they are published. There are a lot of ways that being a writer inside the system can be discouraging. I mean, on the other hand, I think it prepared me. I sort of lowered gradually over the years. I lowered my expectations down to almost zero for my own book. You know, I was just hoping to find just if somebody will publish it, even if it's just, you know, one editor takes a chance on my book, that was going to be exciting enough, because I knew how hard it is to just even get that to that point, you know.
The overarching event of your book is that the Earth's rotation is slowing, first by 56 minutes, but then the span of a day and a night lengthens and extends, and this change affects gravity and time and agriculture. And this is all told through the eyes of Julia, who is a retrospective narrator. She's an older woman telling the story, but during most of the action and the bulk of the book, she is 11 and 12 years old. Why did you choose a retrospective narrator?
I love like a first-person retrospective narrator. I mean, I think as a reader, you know, I just, that voice of someone, you know, saying, this is the way it was for me once, is something I find just sort of inherently moving, and there's just a built-in kind of, I mean, often nostalgia, but at least it's just sort of this feel this awareness of the passage of time and how it changes us. And that I just always sort of fall for that kind of voice. So the voice came to me early. That was actually the main thing I took from the short story, was that voice of a woman looking back like that on childhood. And I also think it was a way, you know, I was interested in writing about childhood, but with an adult voice, so that way I could zoom in close on the childhood scenes, but I would have access to, you know, the older, wiser, more insightful voice of the adult to tell the story. So anyway, that was, I think those are the things that appealed to me about that kind of voice. The one thing it feels natural to me, because most of the time when we, just in life, when we're telling stories, you know, we're telling a story about something that happened in the past, and there's something feels very natural as a storyteller to write that way. I think the one thing that the challenge of it was, that kind of voice obviously implies that the person telling it knows the ending and has reached some certain point beyond these events that are being described. So then in a book like mine, where, you know, the fate of the earth and the entire human species is in a way hanging in the balance, it was sometimes hard to figure out, you know, how to use this voice without taking away from the suspense, you know, because as you read the book, you know that she has at least survived until adulthood. So that was the challenge, to try to make sure it still felt suspenseful.
You're listening to First Draft, a dialogue on writing produced at Aspen Public Radio. I'm Mitzi Rapkin. My guest is Karen Thompson Walker, author of the novel The Age of Miracles. I know that you've cited two apocalyptic books as influencing you, The Road by Cormac McCarthy and Blindness by Jose Saramago. And I'm wondering about your experience with The Age of Miracles and people wanting to label your book as apocalyptic or science fiction, and what your perspective is on genre and labels.
It comes up kind of a lot, the question of where it belongs. And also the other one that people wonder about is like, some people think it, you know, would appeal to young adults also. So it comes up in a few different directions. I mean, for me, I just wanted to write a book that I would like to read. And the books that I like to read most are books where there's a lot of attention has been paid to the sentences, you know, interesting language and stylish language, and the character and all those sort of things we associate, maybe fair or not fair, with literary fiction. But the books that I like best have those qualities, you know, that attention to writing, but also a gripping story that makes you want to turn the page. Books like The Road and Blindness both, for me, had that quality. You know, they felt very kind of thought-provoking and do interesting things with language, but also I couldn't wait to turn the page to find out what would happen next. So I was hoping to write a book sort of in that category. I think I don't come out of a kind of science fiction background, even though I love books and movies that have a sort of a little bit of a science fiction-y premise. Like, another of my favorites is Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro, which also fits into that category. But I've noticed, I think people who are serious science fiction fans probably wouldn't want to classify my book as science fiction, because it just doesn't quite fit into that, I think, because it's less, you know, I wanted the book to feel really realistic, but I wanted it to be focused on the people, and I didn't want to go into too much science, even though I tried to use just enough science to make it seem real. And I've spoken to some science fiction fans who, you know, who could imagine a different version of this premise, in which you would really go into a lot of detail about the physics of what would happen in this situation. So I don't think not all science fiction readers would feel that way, but I have heard from some who feel that way. And some have called it soft science fiction, which I sort of like that term. But yeah, when I wrote the book, I was imagining a sort of more general audience.
I'm wondering about the title and how you came up with the name of the title, because the major event in the book is the slowing. So it would seem that that might be your instinct as far as naming this. So tell me how you came up with The Age of Miracles.
You know, I actually came up with the title early on, like around the time that probably a little before I sent it to agents. I mean, it occurred to me because I heard it in a Billie Holiday song, I mean, that I had known before. She just uses that phrase, The Age of Miracles, and it just felt like it might be right for my book. Because I liked the idea that that the word age could have a double meaning, you know, as in adolescence or, you know, the age of 12, but also an age like, you know, an era in the history of the earth. And then I felt the same about miracles, even though I definitely would mean miracles in kind of a loose sense, you know, not in a religious sense or any kind of traditional sense. But if you think about a miracle as something that happens that breaks with the rules of reality as we know them, I felt like certainly the slowing, the sudden and unexpected slowdown of the rotation of the earth sort of fit into that as sort of an awe-inspiring, even though it has a lot of terrible consequences. It's kind of this awe-inspiring event. And then in another way, because the book really is a lot about growing up and it's about the strangeness of adolescence, I thought of adolescence as another, you know, age of miracles, you know, a time when kids change so quickly that it seems almost impossible, you know, both physically and kind of emotionally. It's just this time that is strange and kind of miraculous in its own way. So, but the title was definitely my idea. When I finished it, I wrote the whole book, almost the whole book under that title. And then when I finished it and I was thinking, you know, getting ready to send it to publishers, I started to wonder if it was the right title. But I did think of other titles, and The Slowing was the main one that I thought of. But I thought that sounded too much like a straight, like science fiction or like a thriller, in a way that I was afraid might be misleading, since the book is so much about you know, ordinary people and the characters and about a young girl growing up. So I stuck with The Age of Miracles.
You're listening to First Draft, a dialogue on writing produced at Aspen Public Radio. I'm Mitzi Rapkin. My guest is Karen Thompson Walker, author of the novel The Age of Miracles.
So one of the things I did ask you was to read a passage from something you wrote. It can be anything you wrote that might have been hard or tricky to write, or something that changed, or just something that you succeeded at. So I'm just wondering what you chose.
The opening, I think beginnings and endings in general for me are, in some ways they're fun, but also really hard. And I always end up spending a huge amount of time on them. So this is just the very opening, which I wrote as a short, which a piece of it, the very first two lines were in the short story, and then I revised it and revised it over years from that time. But it does retain the sort of shape of what it was in the short story in the beginning. We didn't notice right away. We couldn't feel it. We did not sense at first the extra time bulging from the smooth edge of each day like a tumor blooming beneath skin. We were distracted back then by weather and war. We had no interest in the turning of the earth. Bombs continued to explode on the streets of distant countries. Hurricanes came and went. Summer ended. A new school year began. The clocks ticked as usual. Seconds beaded into minutes. Minutes grew into hours. And there was nothing to suggest that those hours, too, were not still pooling into days, each the same fixed length known to every human being. But there were those who would later claim to have recognized the disaster before the rest of us did. These were the night workers, the graveyard shifters, the stockers of shelves and the loaders of ships, the drivers of big rig trucks, or else they were the bearers of different burdens, the sleepless and the troubled and the sick. These people were accustomed to waiting out the night. Through bloodshot eyes, a few did detect a certain persistence of darkness on the mornings leading up to the news. But each mistook it for the private misperception of a lonely, rattled mind.
Did you rewrite that a lot to get to this final version?
Yeah, it was a lot of rewriting, and I really wanted to find a way to introduce this big idea, that, you know, big kind of hard to believe idea, you know, that the rotation of the Earth has suddenly slowed down. I wanted to find a way to introduce it quickly, but also in a way that felt convincing. And so somehow being a little bit indirect and imagining what they didn't notice and how they weren't sure they didn't notice this thing, this change, somehow that felt more convincing to me. You know, like trying to imagine myself as a reader, I felt like I'd be more convinced than if it was just one day the rotation of the Earth slowed down. Like somehow using a little bit of indirection seemed right, but I did really want to introduce the premise kind of immediately.
And how about a brief passage from an author that spoke to you or influenced you as a writer?
The book that I think, and there's a lot of, obviously a lot of different influences, but the book that I think influences me most in terms of writing The Age of Miracles is probably The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Eugenides. And actually, I think it might have been the timing of when I read it was sort of crucial to writing my own book, because I think around that time that I came back to that story, I also had recently read The Virgin Suicides, and I think reading The Virgin Suicides made me realize how there can be a way to write a novel that's really about the ordinary goings-on of a community, which is definitely what The Virgin Suicides is about, but also to a certain extent, that's also what my book is about. But if you write it in the context of a big, strange event, suddenly all these parts of ordinary life can kind of shimmer. And I feel like that happens with The Virgin Suicides. It happens, you know, it's the story of these teenage sisters who all commit suicide in a short period of time, but it's so he takes that dramatic event, but by telling that story, it really has a way of, yeah, sort of capturing an entire community and all the ordinary, but sort of the beautifully ordinary goings on of that world. And actually, again, I'm going to read the opening. And again, he does something that I tried to do, which is sort of captures immediately in the first paragraph. I mean, his is even more efficient. The first paragraph you hear, you get a little sort of sense of what the entire novel is about. And I just like the efficiency and also the sort of lyrical way that he manages to do it. So it both does a lot of work, but it also sounds very nice. On the morning the last Lisbon daughter took her turn at suicide, it was Mary this time, and sleeping pills like Therese. The two paramedics arrived at the house, knowing exactly where the knife drawer was and the gas oven and the beam in the basement from which it was possible to tie a rope. They got out of the EMS truck, as usual, moving much too slowly, in our opinion. And the fat one said under his breath, "This ain't TV, folks. This is how fast we go." He was carrying the heavy respirator and cardiac unit past the bushes that had grown monstrous, and over the erupting lawn came an immaculate 13 months earlier when the troubles began.
So that really influenced and helped you with The Age of Miracles.
Yeah, and still, even the next thing, I think it sort of helps me. That's the way I love for a book to begin with, where it lays everything out like that. So, you know, the book I'm working on now, I tried to do a sort of similar, I mean, it's a different type of, different story, different type of opening, but again, it's something that accomplishes, hopefully, a lot in the very, very beginning.
You're listening to First Draft, a dialogue on writing produced at Aspen Public Radio. I'm Mitzi Rapkin. My guest is Karen Thompson Walker, author of the novel The Age of Miracles. Where do you write?
I mean, when I was writing The Age of Miracles, I wrote almost all of it at one desk in my studio apartment. But now that I have a more flexible schedule, it helps me to actually change locations, you know, so I write all over. I mean, I write at home, and even at home, I write in different locations in my house, I mean, my apartment. I lately have actually been doing a lot of writing at coffee shops, which is something I used to do, like, in college, but I got away from it, but now I'm back to it. So right now, my husband and I live in Iowa City, because my husband's a student in the Iowa Writers' Workshop. He's a writer also. So right now, lately, I've been doing a lot of writing at the coffee shop attached to the Great Prairie Life bookstore. So that's currently one of my favorite spots to write.
And what do you do or where do you go to get away from writing?
I think walking is a really sort of important part of my life that I've did just more and more. Like, I love to go for long walks. When I lived in New York, I would just, you know, on the weekends, my husband and I would go on just these really long walks around Brooklyn. And now I do it in Iowa, although Iowa City is so much smaller, it's harder to get that length. But there's something kind of, I think, mysterious and peaceful about going for a walk that is a nice break from writing, but then also sometimes leads me to have, you know, like, I get new ideas and new inspiration somehow just from the act of walking and just sort of observing the world again, you know, in a new, like, something about walking by, it's like just the right pace to be noticing interesting things around me in a way that feels good after being so inside my own head, you know, in writing.
Who do you show your work to get feedback first?
I first show it to my husband, Casey. He's, you know, also a writer and a really great reader. So he's definitely my first reader. And then after it passes through him, then I show it to a couple of other friends who are writers that I know from graduate school. And then once I've gotten it, you know, gotten their feedback and sort of polished it as much as I can, then I like to show it to, I mean, in the past, it would have been my agent next. Now, this is the first time with this new book, the first time I've, you know, been writing something while I do have an editor. So I'll probably show, you know, this time around, I'll show it to my editor, Kate, once I get it to sort of as polished as I can, and I can get it, you know, with the help of my other first readers, and then I'll show it to her.
And how have you dealt with rejection?
There's no, like, sort of easy answer to that. I mean, I think rejection is always hard, and also one thing that I knew before but definitely realized it even more is that the rejection never ends, you know, like, that's always going to be a part of the writer's life, because, you know, once you publish a book, then, you know, there's of course reviews, but also like Amazon readers, you know, there's always going to be someone who doesn't agree with how you've written your book. And I think from the time I first entered the and it got rejected to now, if I hear something negative about my book, you know, online or something, I think the answer is always to just go try to stay focused as much as possible on the writing. You know, to just, like, go back into the project that I'm working on and try to get immersed in that. And then that always, like, lessens the meaning of the rejection if I'm immersed in work and writing.
What is your favorite word?
I think the word I like, my favorite word in writing and the word I like to use the most, I think, is the word bloom. And I like to use it figuratively, you know, like a sadness bloomed in the room. And it's a word that I'm always trying to find, you know, synonyms for it, because I want to use it, you know, on every page. And I don't know why, I'm not sure exactly why, and I use it a lot in The Age of Miracles, and I already have had to cut it once from overuse in my new book. And I think it's just because it's a nice and unexpected way to talk about something changing. You know, it's just a more interesting way to say something. You know, it has transformed, but it's just more interesting to use that word bloom. I think there's something, and it kind of connects something so primal to think of something blooming like a flower. So that's a word that, especially just as a writer, I tend to be drawn to again and again.
You've been listening to First Draft, a dialogue on writing produced at Aspen Public Radio. My guest was Karen Thompson Walker, author of the novel The Age of Miracles. You can follow First Draft on Facebook. Just look for First Draft, a dialogue on writing, and click like, and on Twitter at First Draft APR. You can email me at firstdraftwriters@gmail.com. The theme music for First Draft was produced and performed by Murph Mahaffey. I'm Mitzi Rapkin. Thanks for listening.